Hello and welcome to episode 2 of series 2 of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our profession. My name's Craig Smith from The Big Picture People. So this is the second episode of the second series of our podcast. If you've not already done so, I definitely recommend you head across to our website and catch up on any of the episodes from the previous series that you missed in series one. We had 30 different episodes in there with 30 different interviews or mainly interview shows anyway, which if you've not caught up on, you will find helpful and useful, I think. This is, as we move into the second series, just as a reminder, if you didn't already realize, which you probably have because there was no show last week, we are now on a fortnightly pattern, so every 2 weeks. The first series was a weekly show, but this series is going to be a fortnightly show with some shorter episodes in between the main interview shows, which will be, as I say, will be going out every fortnight. I may do a shorter episode on the intervening weeks, though, but broadly speaking, the interviews are going to be every 2 weeks. If you haven't already done so, if you could subscribe to our mailing list, that would be fantastic. And the reason for that is that you will get advance warning and notification when the podcasts are going out. We'll also let you know what's going to be happening on the following week's show or the following episode, I should say, not the following week because we're a fortnightly show now. But you will find out what will be covered in the next episode, so you can be mindful of that. And we'll also let you know on the day that the episode goes out that it's available, just in case you haven't already subscribed to the show via your podcast platform of choice, which I would definitely recommend that you do, because that way you won't miss out on any of them. So I hope you're having a good start to 2021. It's obviously still a challenging time for many of us. If there's anything we can do, if there's anything, any areas that you'd like us to cover that are particularly relevant to you at the moment, and you think that would be useful to our community, please let us know. Please drop us an email at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or there is a sign up form on the podcast page, which is engagingic.com, where you can pop a request in there, or you can let us know if there's anything else you'd like to tell us about the show. Any feedback would be gratefully received. Anyway, on to today's interview. Towards the end of season one of Engaging Internal Comms, I had an interview with Doreen Anwar where we talked about the challenges and opportunities of being in a relatively early stage career within internal comms. And this is a topic that I wanted to come back to again, and particularly looking at it from the perspective of how do we develop a trusted advisor status, both for ourselves within an internal communications role, but also how can we develop our proteges, our new recruits, into being in that trusted advisor status within an internal comms role. So today's interview, I wanted to explore that, and I really wanted to look at areas of what are some of the things that you can do to build up that trusted status role within the organization. How can you build that element of trust with your peers and your colleagues? But also, how can we encourage our new starters or relatively fresh professionals within to the internal comms community in order to be able to develop them into those roles? And I think what we're going to be talking about in today's interview applies not just for internal communications. I think any role within an organization, particularly within organizational development type roles, where we tend not to have lots of resources that we can control directly, but we tend to have to do a lot of our work through influence and through other people's resources and other people's teams, because we tend to be fairly lean in that respect. So this whole role of being a trusted advisor within our organization, I thought was a really interesting element. And how do we develop that within our sort of fresh new talent within the organization? And how do we help encourage them into those sorts of roles? So that's what we're going to be looking at in today's interview. So my interviewee today is Elizabeth Isaacs-Shadeya. We're going to be talking about the topic of becoming a trusted advisor. Now, Elizabeth is Internal Communications Manager at LexisNexis UK. Now, we're going to find out all about LexisNexis UK in a second. She's been there since September 2019, and she's just recently moved into a line management role, having previously worked in corporate communications as in corporate communications executive. She's also worked at the Royal Society of Chemistry, and before that, she was Tools and Engagement Specialist at Indesit. Elizabeth has an MA from the University of St Andrews, and I'm really looking forward to speaking to you, Elizabeth. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Craig. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you very much. And just remind me, whereabouts in the country are you at the moment?
I'm currently in Cambridge. Not much to say about it. I'm literally looking outside of the window and it just looks like any other day in any part of the year. A bit of a grey sky, but balmy weather. So
right, yeah. Yeah, we've got a lovely blue sky here today. It's a very kind of typical winter's clear sky and blue sky. Yes.
Days.
Yes, yes. And it is quite chilly, actually. So anyway, I mentioned that you're working at LexisNexis UK. Yeah. Tell us all about LexisNexis UK. What does the business do? What does the organization do? How big is it? And what's your role there?
Well, LexisNexis is like an information broker. That's how I like to think of them anyway. So we provide information and analytics tools and just content to legal and tax professionals. Mm-hmm. And we do this through journals, loose leafs, software, and just apps as well that go into Word. So just basically getting the information that they need right where they need it, quickly and as straightforwardly as possible, and in really cool ways.
And how many people work in the organization?
So LexisNexis UK has about 1,000 people in it. We are part of a global organization, LexisNexis Legal and Professional, and that is part of a group, so RELEX Group, which is very, very large and includes other organizations. So Elsevier, which is a famous publisher, and Reed Exhibitions, who make Comic-Con, and Risk Business Analytics. So it's a very large group.
Right. Okay. Fantastic. And I mentioned that you're internal comms manager there. So what sort of things are you responsible for? Obviously internal comms. What sort of things are you producing at the moment? And we'll go on to talk a little bit more specifically about some of your work.
I love that question. I really do, because internal communications can mean a lot of different things, depending on what organization you're in and how established the function is and how traditional the approach to internal comms is or not. So in general, I would say the things I worry about are making sure people know what's going on in a timely way, encouraging people to come together in interesting ways and for interesting activities. I see my little team, like myself and Lauren, who works with me, as the cultural engine of the organization. So in that bucket, I might also throw employee engagement, diversity and inclusion, employer brand, and probably a little bit of learning and development in there as well. So it's quite broad when you look at the list of things that we're actually involved in. It's incredibly broad, but I think that's just the nature of internal communications, particularly in an organization where those other aspects don't exist as separate functions.
Yeah.
Separate roles. So I think you end up doing everything.
Yeah, I agree. You definitely, I mean, when I was pondering the idea of the podcast, because my interest is, you know, I do a lot of work in internal comms, but I'm also interested in organizational development in its broadest sense. So, with the name of the podcast, I wanted it to be kind of obvious who it was for, but also wanted to, you know, because employee engagement and internal communications for me go hand in hand. And so, you know, and I think it's a very broad spectrum of interests, and I agree with you. And I think you're right. I think in organizations, that are smaller, that haven't got differentiated departments, it will span a lot of those. But I also think in bigger organizations, it needs to be joined up with those other functions as well. There needs to be a line of sight between them. So I think it's a really refreshing perspective. And it kind of flows into what I wanted to talk to you about today. So, and it's a nice segue, I think, because I met you on LinkedIn. You know, we've kind of met through sort of LinkedIn Messenger, and I looked at your profile, and I've interviewed at least one other person in this first sort of run of shows where I'm really interested in. I know you've got experience in internal comms, but people who are kind of relatively fresh to the profession have got a fresh pair of eyes and are really kind of looking at it with some with a different lens. And I think you know, you some of the things you've just talked about there, and the conversation we had a few weeks ago, just really thought, you know, there's some really nice perspectives here that I think people who've been in the profession for maybe a longer time, who've maybe, you know, it's always good to speak. So I guess, you know, and I know it's not necessarily initial impressions, because as I say, you've worked in IC for a while, but you've moved into a managerial role recently, it's new for you. Yeah. And it links to what you've just been talking about. How what have you observed about the way that organizations get the best out of IC and IC professionals like you, in terms of really understanding what it is that you can do and what you can do for the organization, but also understanding that broader perspective that you just talked about there and all those different areas that overlap with what you do?
Yeah. If I look back at the various different roles that I've had, because I think I've worked for three organizations. It feels like, I think, really four, because one went through a merger and acquisition while I was there. And different parts of that organization as well. So it really does feel, I think most internal comms professionals will probably empathize with this, but it's sometimes a week can feel like 1,000 years. So we squeeze a lot into the time that we do work for an organization. And I think the times when I've gotten the most out of it, or felt like I'm being the most impactful, it's been when I've been able to partner with a senior leader who really gets it. And even if they don't, are willing to trust me to do what needs to be done, and are bought in far enough to really just go with the process. Not that I just want to be given free rein and people should just let me do whatever I want, but it's the idea that you trust me as the expert and hear what I have to say, even when it's beyond, let's send an email out this morning versus this afternoon, but in actually sometimes I have really valuable insight into how our people will respond to the message, and maybe even into the decision itself. So bringing internal comms into the conversation early enough that we can help shape the decision in a way such that it lands well with the audience and is as effective as possible. I think there's a really important role for us to play there in terms of just being the go-between. And I know it's important for leaders to develop their own relationships with their people so that they get a sense of how people are feeling and will respond for themselves. But there's a limit to how close people can get, how close leaders can get. And as internal comms professionals, it's really the point of our job is to be connected with what's happening across the business. So why wouldn't you take advantage of that? There are very few other functions in an organization that literally touch every part of the organization.
I think that's really interesting. Sorry, Elizabeth. I think that's really interesting because I think, you know, I know some internal communications people who see themselves as being not necessarily a one-way conduit, but also almost being the kind of broadcasting division of the senior management team. You know, their job is to sort of to spread the information out to the organization, and I don't always see people having that kind of that self-awareness to realize that actually it's part of my role is to challenge them as well and actually feed back some of that, you know, from frontline information, from the front line that sometimes isn't always, they always don't want to hear that. There might be some tough things that need to be fed back. I mean, how do you manage that? And how do you, because I guess this is at the heart of what we're talking about here, about being that trusted advisor. How do you deal with that when it isn't always something that they may want to hear? How do you, without, you know, kind of sort of making it so, you know, polite that it mean, it doesn't have any impact. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know for anyone else. I know for myself, it's why I do what I do. It's what I am interested in. That's yeah. how I got into internal comms in the first place. I care about making sure that the organization is, one, getting the most out of its people, but also that the people who actually quite often are the closest to understanding the impact of what we're doing as an organization have an opportunity to impact the direction of the organization as a whole. Mm. I really strongly believe that you're building a wonky and half-cocked strategy if you're not taking into account that insight from, I don't like to say the bottom or anything like that, because that suggests a hierarchical aspect to the information flow. But in essence, the people on the ground speaking to our customers or out there making contact with our partners, they're the ones you really want to hear about when you're thinking about how to develop your organization. Mm. And if comms is just broadcast from the leadership outwards, then you're not getting that richness of insight. Mm. And so in those conversations with senior leaders, yes, you need to be polite and watch out for any career limiting statements or approaches.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, you're never going to become a trusted advisor if you never learn how to challenge.
No.
And I think I'm still learning how to challenge productively. I very much err on the side of politeness, partly culturally. Like, I'm Nigerian, and there are some, well, my family is, and obviously I was raised here, but there are some ideas that have been bred into me around respect for not just your elders, but also people in senior positions,
sure,
which sometimes make it difficult for me to be as forthright as I might otherwise be. But I'm increasingly appreciating the value of the insight that I can bring to those conversations. And I think the more I recognize that, the easier it becomes to say, hey, can we take a second to think about this? And normally I will take a questioning approach rather than a directive approach, because obviously these are more senior leaders, but asking the right question in the right way at the right time can have an immeasurable impact. And I think it's important to recognize that as part of my responsibility.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think it's also about being self-aware enough to know that you. I'm significantly more down the career path than you are, and I sometimes struggle with that kind of, you know, holding up the mirror to people who, you know, really need to hear some difficult truths. I think, and it's always a fine line, because you do. It's kind of that part of the trusted advisor role, I think, of being supportive but also being robust when you need to be. And it's no, in that respect, I guess it's no different to managing people. You need to support them when they need to be supported, but you also need to push back when actually they need to maybe reflect on their own, what they're doing, and whether it's the right path. Oh, you know, you mentioned about that you don't like to talk about the top or the bottom. A really nice analogy someone once shared with me, which I think is, it kind of does away with that hierarchical thing, is that, you know, to visualize the organization as a circle, and the people outwardly facing at the front are the people who are kind of facing into your customers, and the management and the leadership move around that circle to support the different out, but they're in the middle of the circle, and they can't always see what's on the other side of that, outside of that circle, and they need people to be able to transmit that information to them so they can go and support. And so it does away with the hierarchical thing, but it also emphasizes that we're all part of the same thing, we're just in different places doing different things. So anyway, I digress. But in terms of one of the things you'd mentioned to me, and links to what you said right at the beginning of the book, our conversation today, which was around sometimes you need to educate people about what internal comms is all about. And I think you mentioned you found that is the case. There is an educational element about what we can do and how much better or different we could do things. So tell me a little bit more about that.
I think, so for me, it's been a very organic process. And obviously now we're in a world in which, you know, there are internal communications masters that you can do where you learn about this stuff. And then, you know, you have this whole set of information that you can then present or trot out to show people the impact. But for me, I've learned that very organically. And as I've learned it, I've learned how to articulate the impact. And I think it's been mostly relational. And I keep coming back to this because I really do think that relationships are what makes businesses successful. And I don't think I'm alone in that. It comes down to when you're talking about something with someone and you really strongly feel like there's more you can say here than just, hey, let's send this email on Tuesday afternoons because more people are going to read it then say it. And if it's maybe too late that time, having said it, then it will hopefully mean that the next time that person is working on something, they might bring you in earlier. Particularly if the insight that you're sharing ends up being really impactful or actually the point that might have made a difference. Not that you're going to hold back on information and only share it afterwards I told you so, but more just to demonstrate that, you know, you spotted something, you've raised it as soon as you were able to or given the opportunity to or created an opportunity for yourself to, because I think there's a lot of space for that. And then the next time you'll be able to give more impact if you are given the opportunity earlier. So I think, I don't think there's a moment where you can, I don't know, stand up and make an announcement to everyone, hey guys, we're awesome and you should involve us in everything. Because one, we don't have the capacity, really, to be honest. Most internal comms teams don't really have the capacity to be involved in every single project in which they might be impactful. But we might get to the point, for example, where, you know, we have a statement of service or something that we can put out to the business to say, hey, this is the kind of thing that internal comms can be really helpful to you for. Get in touch with us if you're working on something that you'd like us to get to work with you, to partner with you on. So that's the point at which you would like to get. But I think well before that point, you want enough people in senior positions or in influential positions anyway to understand that for themselves so that they're already using you as that in that way as a service that provides like trusted advice and then can endorse whatever messaging you put out. And I don't think broadcasting how awesome you are should ever come first.
Someone
else should blow your trumpit.
And I don't think it's necessarily about self-promotion. It's basically what you've said. It's about helping people to understand what we could do, you know, within reason and the kind of service offering that you can provide. But also with that comes a sense of prioritization that you can't do everything in that service offering. You know, the organization needs to decide, and I think it needs to decide what sort of comms culture it wants as well. And I think, I think you can do that implicitly as well rather than explicitly.
Yeah, exactly.
So you one of the things you talked about that really resonated for me when we had our preliminary conversation and early in my career, I worked for an organization that had a kind of mantra. It was an American organization, so it sounds a little bit odd, but it was knowing the business cold, which kind of doesn't really, you know, but I think we kind of get what it means. It's about knowing the business inside out, regardless of where you work. So knowing how we make, move and sell our products, because it was a fast moving consumer goods company. And I know you'd said one of the things that's been really important to you is really knowing the business, how the business works, so you can build trust with stakeholders and you can have empathy and you can understand, you know, the challenges that people have in different parts of the organization. Again, you just tell me a little bit more about how you came to that conclusion and how that's helped you in terms of, you know, the things we've been talking about today and your effectiveness as an internal communicator.
So I think I learned that again organically in my first internal communications role, just because I started from the call center, and through the role I had before I became an internal communicator as a sales coach. So the organization I was at, Indesit at the time, had developed a role which had a team of people listening into sales calls and coaching, working with the advisors to help them improve their performance. And it's not just in terms of you know, stick to the script. It was more, you know, increasing empathy and, you know, helping the customer to feel like they are heard, and all with the aim to build brand loyalty. And what we discovered is that people didn't really know enough information about what was happening with our products in enough time. And so out of that group, I mean, that was one thing that we came across, but there were several other things that we became aware of that would, if the business approached them differently, help the impact of those sales advisors. And so as a team, we became involved in a whole bunch of projects, which exposed us to other parts of the business. And then when I finally became an internal communicator, I was quite proactive in building my connections with the different areas of the business and understanding what they were doing, because I was very aware that there was likely to be a perception that I didn't really understand all of that. And so I wanted to like head that off at the pass. And I think in that role, because I'd come at it from a, you know, hey, I want to understand things from your perspective first so that I can serve you and help you be successful in what you're trying to achieve, I think that really helped. Not just in building trust, but also in those moments when, you know, we all have them, when things don't quite go to plan and you need people to like pitch in and support to like pull off the final result. I think it just builds this sense of like team. Which is really important. So that I learned very consciously in my first role. And I've been more or less proactive about that in following roles. And where I've been less so, it's been to my detriment.
No, I think that's, and I think that's a tremendously powerful learning. And you know, it's great that you've come at that organically. And I know as of someone who employs and has employed trusted advisors in the past, there's nothing more compelling about wanting to work with someone who takes the time out to understand your business and understand what you do and understand what, how their role fits into helping you, helping them. And I've also seen the counter of that, which is people who kind of just, you know, they rock up and they're kind of not arrogant, but there's a sense of it's fine. I'll get my head around it, and don't take time to just sort of walk in your shoes for a little period. Even if it doesn't take long, I don't think, but I think that's a really, really, really powerful thing to, you know, to for anybody who's starting out in any profession, whether it's internal comms, is to really get to understand your the people who you're going to be working with. So you build that trust and they will trust you as well. So I think that's brilliant. And you'd also talked about when we had our preliminary conversation about the importance of language as well. And I think it had these maybe links to what you've just been talking about there, is how language is really important. And we're not just talking about, you know, kind of written language here, I guess. We're just talking about tone of voice and empathy. Tell me a little bit more about that, because I think that's, again, it's a really important part of the IC leader's role.
I again feel quite strongly about this. If our job is to surface what's happening around the organization and create opportunities for connections to be made, which might otherwise not have been, we need to be speaking in the language that people speak in when they're speaking to each other. And I think there's a tendency in what I call traditional comms, which other people, there are probably more formal terms for it, but the like old school way of looking at corporate communications or internal communications, very formal language. You must be absolutely correct in your diction, both obviously when written, but also in the way you write, and the style of writing needs to be professional, which I say in inverted commas, because I'm not entirely sure that everyone means the same thing when they say professional. But I think it's stuffy, and most organizations that are alive and have a living, active culture, which is enjoyable, are less stuffy than one might expect. And so speaking in the language that people use conversationally helps make, I really strongly believe, helps make comms feel more relatable. Yeah, where I've had the opportunity to influence a change in tone, it's been noticed and appreciated. Language.
And can you give an example? Because I know exactly what you mean, I think, anyway. And I think there's a sort of, because, you know, there may be people thinking, well, yeah, it needs to be professional, which I guess there's an element of, you know, if you try and get too hip and too, you know, I'm kind of being stereotypical here, but, you know, I think there's a danger as well, perhaps, of going too far into, I won't call it dumbing down, but you know what I mean? It's maybe you trying to be too hip and too cool and actually losing a bit of credibility. So how, I mean, do you have any examples of where you've changed the tone of something, you know, without obviously giving anything away that is confidential, but any examples of how that might work in reality?
I think in reality, it's perhaps a lot more subtle than what I'm describing. Yes. In reality, it's things like using contractions more or you know, choosing to use plain English as opposed to the specific word, which is five syllables long, which means what you're trying to say, but is less accessible for some people.
Yeah.
I think it's understanding your audience and pitching the way you speak to them. So if you have a highly educated group of colleagues who just happen not to understand the thing that you're talking about, don't speak to them like they're idiots, but maybe explain in enough detail and perhaps where possible in terms that relate to how they look at the world, so that they can understand what you're saying. I'm not suggesting at all that we suddenly start using street slang, but mostly because, first of all, I wouldn't pull that off. I don't know enough street slang to construct full paragraphs in it. But I certainly do think that, you know, if there is some short form, so in terms of culture, each culture evolves its own form of a language. So an organization eventually will have its own way of describing certain things, which you should be using in your communications. And I'm sure most corporate comms people will do that organically, but less in a top down, this is our brand tone type of way, and more in a bottom up, hey, this is how people in the corridors are talking about this thing kind of way. And just making sure that that's reflected. So for example, I worked in an organization, which I shan't mention, which uses the term learnings quite a lot. Now, objectively, I don't really think it was used in the right way. So like, what are our learnings from that? Well, no, actually, what have we learned from that would be the correct term.
Yes.
Or phrase to use. But given that that's how in our culture we describe outputs or lessons learned from an activity, let's use that. It's not going to, I mean, the Oxford Dictionary people aren't going to show up at my door to say, hey, you said that wrong.
But it's part of the vernacular. Yeah,
exactly. There's no language police that's going to come crack down on me. So if it doesn't break all grammatical rules and make my communications unintelligible, then go with the company's vernacular.
I agree. And I mean, an example for me from that was we did some work for a client, and they were insistent on, they referred to, you know, they were trying to do this across the organization, refer to everyone as associates. So, you know, you talk about your associates in such and such a department, but we were, some of the people we were dealing with who were in a manufacturing kind of, you know, kind of frontline people just wouldn't talk, you know, you wouldn't say, I'm just going to the canteen now and just to see if any of my associates are there. They would say, yeah, I'm my workmates.
Yeah.
And so we, you know, really tried to encourage them to do that. So I think for me, the lesson around that, and I'd be interested to know if you concur, is if you're going to use kind of the vernacular, then make sure it's the audience vernacular, not your vernacular. Because I've also seen this go the other way, where one of my biggest bugbears, you know, you said about learnings. Mm-hmm. One of my biggest bugbears is sustainment. I don't know whether you've come across that, but it really drives me mad when people talk about our sustainment policy, because it's just really bad English, but also it's just not a word. And that used to really make me go cringe when people would talk about sustainment in front of frontline employees, and you can look at it and say, is that a word? I've never. Yeah. And it's just clearly stuff that we use around the table in the management meetings, but nobody else has a clue what we're talking about. So I don't know if you concur on that one, but
I mean, sustainment is painful to hear, but also I think you do raise a really good point in that there is internal vernacular for the senior lead or for the leadership community, and there's vernacular for everyone else. And if you're really in an organization where the culture is super gelled, then that's the same thing, or closer to the same thing. And if people just happen to, it's a massive organization, and people just happen to those worlds never cross or very rarely cross, then yeah, they are very different things. And then you have to pick one. And personally, if given the choice, I would pick the vernacular of, I would not pick the vernacular of the leadership community.
No.
Of everyone else. But
I think that's a good rule of thumb.
That becomes quite complicated. So, for example, I was working in Whirlpool, and we had so many different types of population in lots of different countries. So not only do you then have the choice of vernacular versus professional English, but you also have that choice in every single other main language in which you're communicating. And that obviously complicates things.
That's a whole different ball game.
It is.
We've got an interview coming up in a few episodes time about one of my interviewees works in an organization where they've got it's a kind of science project where they've got people from literally all over the world and scientists working together from all over the world, and it's we're going to be talking about multicultural communications, about a little bit of what you were talking about earlier about cultural norms and how do we ensure we've got a diverse environment, but at the same time make sure that we have some consistency about the way we interpret things, because otherwise it would be very sporadic. So yeah, it's a whole different topic and ball game, I think, when we get into those sort of but still a fascinating area. It is very much fun. Yeah, look, I want to just sort of bring things to a conclusion just by asking you a question around I mean one of the things I think it's come across really strongly in this interview, but also when I had our initial chat, is you come across, anyway, I've only met you through LinkedIn and a couple of calls that we've had, you strike me as someone who's very talented, very self-aware, and has lots of potential. Some of the people listening to this show here might be on, and I've asked this question before to another interviewer who was a sort of similar career stage in their career as well. I think it's a question to other people who are at that relatively early stage and you're learning and very open-minded and sort of soaking everything up like you are, but also people who manage people like you and how they can get the best out of you in terms of you really helping you to deliver your potential and get you to that trusted advisor status, which everybody wants a trusted advisor working for them. No one would push back against that. But what can we do to become trusted advisors, and what can we do to nurture trusted advisors within our organizations? That's what I'd really like to get your insights into that. Elizabeth, please.
I think it's just being open and honest. I think trust begets trust, right? So if you are already in post and don't feel like you've yet achieved trusted advisor status, then go out and meet people, share what your objectives are, and ask for people's, when I say people, I mean both people who are influential in your organization and also leaders. And when I mean influential, I mean the people who are the change makers. People do what they do or follow them or watch what they do and I guess decide their opinion based on that. But so those are the people you want to get close to, find out what they're thinking, find out what how they're responding to things that are happening within your organization, and align with them. Be willing to adapt your own objectives to absorb some of theirs. And then if you're looking to develop someone into a trusted advisor or hire one, then when you bring them in for an interview, talk honestly. I mean, obviously not sharing anything that's confidential, but speak really honestly about the problems that you're facing as an organization. I personally get really excited when I hear a problem statement that I feel like I can contribute towards. Particularly when it's not we need to increase readership of our emails, but more our engagement data stats are going down and we can't really work out why. Oh, that's a meaty problem that I could get into. And so it's sharing what the issues are, and being open with that. And then also when they join, setting up a meeting with everyone that they need to meet in order to be effective. I don't understand why some people are left to do that for themselves. It's just not helpful.
Okay, no, I think that's really useful insight. So when at the recruitment stage, be really honest and attract people who are looking to not just to meet a job description, but are there to kind of think creatively but then once they're in, again, links to what we've been talking about today, is give them opportunities to meet and not just the kind of standard you know, whirlwind that you get in your first 2 weeks of induction of all the people you meet who you're never going to remember who they are, actually some meaningful meetings to talk about with some structure around it, so they can talk about some of their own challenges that you can help them with, and you can start to sort of offer them back something about you and what your values are, and start to sort of build those relationships. So I think that's really, really important. Well, look, that's been really, really interesting. I find the sort of refreshing perspective that you've given on, I think I really enjoy speaking to people who kind of have got that wisdom that comes from when you arrive into a profession. And again, I say, you know, you've been in for a few years now, but when you've still got that fresh perspective and you've not kind of developed all the bad habits that we sometimes do when we've been in doing something for a long time. And I think it's really, really, really helpful and refreshing for you to share that with us. And for me, one of the key things is, you know, the whole thing around being trusted advisor, around relationships, around empathy, about being very self-aware and conscious of where you still got a lot to, you know, where you still have things to learn as well. I think that's a really important part as well. Anything you'd want to add just in terms of just wrapping up before we conclude with just a couple of other things that we want to just, another question that I've got for you, which you know is coming, but anything else you want to say on the topic of being trusted advisor and developing that trusted advisor role?
No, I guess it's just that you have to be willing to do the work once you're there, or... Because internal comms is a job you can dial up or down based on your level of interest. You could do the basic and just deliver the things that people come to you with. Or you could, you know, go out on a limb and really look for more and make it more. But when you do, be prepared for the increased workload and the increased responsibility, because then you're jointly taking responsibility for delivery of projects that might have been not even within your visibility before. So be prepared for it, but I don't know, I find that exciting. I think that's
definitely
what we're doing.
Definitely. Well, look, Elizabeth, I did warn you, and I gave you a quick reminder at the beginning. Just quick thing that I always do with my interviewees is just to find out a little bit more about you. That you know, generally, even people who maybe work with you, your colleagues, or maybe even your family, something you're interested in now, or something you've done in your past that you're willing to share with our listeners. So over to you. What's your sort of surprising or different story about yourself?
I don't know if it's particularly different or surprising, but it's become more conscious, I guess, is that I'm naturally quite percussive. Like, I learned the drums for a period of time. But what I've discovered is that if I'm listening to music, I'm more following the beat than I am the song. So I don't remember lyrics or even the name of the artist, but I will remember the beat, and I can and I quite often will play out beats to things, but not just with my hands, but also with my feet and other like, just, I don't know, it's like everything in me responds to beat. I think that's quite fun. I've become more aware of it during lockdown, because, you know, being in your own space, but also then now I've moved in with housemates, it's become more conscious. I've just become more aware that I'm always tapping, or my version of beatboxing, which is not at all professional anything that I would want to show anyone. But I like make rhythm with my feet and my hands and like my voice, like just everything. It's the rhythm of life, or something cheesy.
I'm a bass guitarist, so I wear both hats. I'm, you know, kind of melodic and rhythmic at the same time. So maybe after we finish the interview, we'll have a chat about that.
Because
And I mean, I'll tell you after the interview. It's kind of my story. It's not here to share my stories. Well, look, that's brilliant, and maybe a potential for a show is I'll tap out a rhythm on a table, and you've got to try and work out what it is, whether you can work it out just from the percussive elements of it. So maybe that's an idea for a new quiz show or something.
Sounds awesome.
Well, look, that's been absolutely tremendous, Elizabeth. Where if people want to reach out to you and say hello and just ask you, maybe, you know, connect with you, LinkedIn, I was going to put your LinkedIn profile in the show notes, is that all right?
Yes, please.
Any other areas of the internet where you spend your life? Are you a Twitter or a tweeter, or are you anywhere? anywhere? Just mainly LinkedIn.
LinkedIn really is my vibe. I think work absorbs so much of my imagination that I only have space left for a little bit of LinkedIn in.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, that's good enough. I'll put the link into the show notes. And you know, obviously, if anyone wants to reach out to you, and if you want to respond, then you can connect with them that way. So that's brilliant. Well, look, it's been absolutely tremendous speaking to you, Elizabeth. I've really enjoyed that conversation. Thank you very much for your time. This interview is going to be sort of going out relatively early in 2021. So it seems a little bit premature now because it's still 2020, but Happy New Year and all of that. I should have said that at the beginning, but it's been absolutely lovely speaking to you, and I look forward to maybe getting you back on the show at some point in the future when we've got another topic that you can give us some insights into as well.
That sounds awesome. Thanks very much for having me. It's been really, really interesting. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Elizabeth. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
I'm conscious that not everybody who listens to this podcast will be involved in this area, but one of the areas we've been working in a lot recently is in helping organizations to improve their health and safety cultures. We found that it's one of those areas that typically relies on fairly conventional ways of communicating and training people, often relying on classroom-based training or other methods that are really more one-way communication or one-way training or one-way flow of information, very much driven around compliance rather than building commitment and culture change within the organization. So we've developed an approach at the Big Picture People that organizations that we're working with, some big multinational organizations, are now using and finding really helpful and useful in terms of transforming the way that they communicate and train their people on health and safety issues. And we're looking at here, as I said, at a kind of more strategic cultural issues rather than just transactional, you know, processes and procedures. So I thought it would be useful for you to know that we're running a webinar on the February the 18th, 2021. It's a free webinar, which you can come along to at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, UK time, and you're more than welcome to attend. The webinar is available. You can sign up for it at the following web address. So it's www.safetygame.co.uk. So that's www.safetygame.co.uk. Not the safety game, but just safety game. And at the bottom of that page, you can sign up for the webinar there. It's a Zoom webinar that we're running, and you'll be more than welcome to come along. If that's not an area that you're particularly interested in, or it's not a part of your remit, but you do have someone in your organization who's working in specifically in health and safety, or in particularly learning and development or communications when it comes to health and safety, I think you might find it quite useful, or they will find it quite useful. So please feel free to pass the details on to them as well. Okay, so thank you very much for listening to that, and hopefully if it's not of interest directly to you, there will be someone you know who may benefit from it. Thank you. So thank you for listening to Engaging Internal Comms. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. We'd love to hear your thoughts about the show and any questions, ideas, or feedback that you'd have. Anything you'd like us to cover on future episodes too, please. So you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can get in touch with us via the contact form at engagingic.com. You can also sign up to our mailing list there, and we'll send you relevant news about the show and anything that we think you might be interested in when it comes to internal communications and employee engagement. If you like the show and you haven't already done so, please subscribe to it directly via your podcast service. And you can also subscribe via the links on our podcast page, which again is engagingic.com. If you like the show, we'd be really grateful if you could leave us a review, and also if you could leave some verbal feedback there as well, not just stars. That's always nice to know that we've been appreciated, and particularly how we've helped you. If you know anyone else who might like the show or might benefit from it, please tell them, please share it with them, please share the link to our website, engagingic.com. And that will be great, because we want to grow our community. We want to get as many people involved in the show as possible. The bigger, the better. Okay, thank you.